on, and welcome back to Purple Row Radio. My name is Greg Stanwood, staff writer at Purple Row, and I'm here along with Andrew Martin, who is the managing editor at Purple Row. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing all right. It's been a nice Sunday so far. I had a nice long nap this afternoon, and interestingly enough, there's been a party going on outside. Like, there's a tent outside and a bouncy castle, and there is loud Mexican music that has been playing for the last, like 7 or 8 hours, and they're just having a party. It's good times. I'm just hoping I can sleep through it.
So we'll just get right into it here. We've had some interesting developments over the past week that, you know, a lot of people in the Rockies fan base are excited about. I'm sure as the discussion evolves here, we'll start discussing what we think about these changes. But I'm going to bring these up out of order because I want to talk about Franklin Morales after talking about Felipe Paulino, because I think there's probably more to say.
Fair enough.
Paulino was the roster move that I had been expecting for some time. I think he was kind of the easiest player of all the players who had kind of been on the bubble, in terms of not only holding their roster spot, but also on the bubble of positive public opinion from the fan base recently. And, you know, I'd basically been saying that if any move is going to happen soon, it's going to be Paulino. And so he was designated for assignment today being Sunday the 22nd. So designated for assignment, you have your standard 10-day window for trade, release, or outright. And so we'll find out what actually happens to him in about 10 days or so. And now we called up Greg Reynolds to replace him on the roster, although we're not really certain how permanent of a position that's going to be. The obvious reason to call up Reynolds is because we're going to need a spot starter in about 6 days after the doubleheader on Tuesday. And so he's pitching out of the bullpen for now, but he's probably not going to stick there, especially since AAA has no starters right now. It's pretty sad.
Yeah. Well, what I heard recently, I was reading it on Twitter, is that there's a possibility that they could throw Reynolds. I think Ringlesby is saying they could throw Reynolds on Tuesday based on the timing of things if they want to kind of reshuffle how the doubleheader at the end of the week goes. But, you know, the point is we have another rotation guy in here just to kind of fill that a sixth spot where it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have to throw anyone on short rest anytime in the next, you know, week and a half here, things
nope.
like that.
Exactly.
And considering Reynolds has been, if not flashy, at least effective-ish, his two starts went pretty well. Not great strikeout-to-walk numbers, but then again, the walk numbers weren't bad either, which was kind of a major concern for Reynolds. He's still a bit hittable, but he's got his sinker biting relatively well, and the Springs numbers don't necessarily display this, but, you know, we saw the two Greg Reynolds starts earlier this season, and they're what the team needed, and really we're not looking for him to even plug a hole right now. He's really just kind of up as a convenience for the team. That's why we have, like, a true long man in the pen, because with the release of Paulino, I mean, the next logical step for Paulino after being, you know, washed out as a one-inning, mow-him-down kind of reliever was to be the long man, but the team obviously said, we're going to need Reynolds up anyhow to be a spot starter. We might as well call him up as a long man if we need it. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they don't need it. Hopefully all the starters, you know, go kind of Ubaldo and go 8 innings and, limit damage.
Just to clarify there, Paulino hasn't been released yet, so there's a chance that he'll wind up in our minor system if he clears waivers.
I don't see him clearing waivers. I mean, I could see him clearing waivers, but I just kind of wonder if the team is going to actually want to go for the outright or if they are going to
release him,
you know, just release him. Because there's no way that a team – I mean, we didn't pay him back. I think he made, like, what, 850 this year or something like that?
That's exactly right, 850K. So
brilliant. So yeah. It's not even $1 million investment. And I know that it seems – I still – being someone who talks about baseball, you talk about you throw around numbers like, you know, million, $2 million, $700,000, things like that, like it's pocket change. And in the baseball terms of things, if you can't take a $800,000 flyer on a player, your organization is in absolute crumbling shape. But it still makes me laugh because I'm like, man, is that all? He's only going to make $850,000 this year? Poor baby. Man, I could get my student loans paid off.
Well, yeah, I mean, the obvious argument there would be that if they were going to release him, they would have done it instead of just designating him for assignment. They would have just released him outright.
I wonder if they're just hoping that maybe they can save a few, you know, a prorated however much by not releasing him. I mean, because even if they outright release him and another team picks him up, they're going to be on the hook for, what, half that salary? Something like that, when you consider the prorated league minimum that the other team's going to have to pay.
Right.
Because he basically just made league minimum times two. That was his contract, effectively. So, I mean, at this point, the Rockies would probably be on the hook for about $300,000, and the other team would be on the hook for about $300,000. So, it's not even a financial thing. One of the big, you know, criticisms I saw of how long the move took to make from people on the comment sections on Purple Row was that Dan O'Dowd just didn't want to have the egg on his face. He wanted to say, "Oh, my reclamation project, he's going to do good. He's going to do good."
Which is kind of why I think they're going to try to outright him if he clears.
I mean, like you just said, if AAA Springs rotation is in trouble, I would be interested. I'd be interested to see if they put him back in the rotation down there, because, well, we'll touch on this with Morales a little bit more, but someone else on the site, and there's a lot of names out there, so if you made this comment and you recognize yourself, feel free to comment on it, and I'm sorry I didn't recognize you by name, but the thought was, if you got a reliever, or a pitching prospect, not that Polino's necessarily a prospect, but you know, any kind of a project with control issues, don't convert him to a reliever. Like, just keep him in the minors when it comes to an absolute desperation necessity for depth, yeah, you're kind of stuck. But keep the guy in the minors and let him work out his struggles in the rotation. So, even if he's throwing 100 pitches over three innings and walking seven guys, I mean, he's getting the chances to get repetition. Because if you're out there for three, four batters at a time, I mean, and that's only like twice, maybe three times a week, I just don't know how much of a swing you can really get into as far as working out major control issues. And with Paulino, I mean, you look at his splits, and his peripheral numbers all look better as a starter. Fewer walks to more strikeouts. Well, actually, no, fewer strikeouts, but fewer walks as well. The ratios look better, and he's still a hittable pitcher because the biggest complaint about him was that 98-mile-per-hour fastball doesn't move too much. So there's room for Paulino to still be an effective Major League Baseball player. It just – the timing was just not right for Colorado.
Of course, at the beginning of the year, before his stock fell so far, he probably wouldn't have cleared waivers. So, I mean, he was going to make the team somewhere. I was a little surprised, and I think we might have talked about this back when it actually happened, but I was a little surprised how quickly they relocated Paulino to the pen as a one-inning guy, especially since we knew at that point Aaron Cook was not going to be there. Now, Esmiel Rogers did earn that spot out of the spring, but at the same time, I thought that they were going to keep Paulino in that role as the primary competition a lot longer. And it was like just mid-March where they were like, nah, he's going to be in the pen. So that was a little bit of a surprise to me at the time. It might have been more beneficial to him because, as you were just saying, you know, I know your analogy was that he would be starting in the minors, but I don't think he could have made it through, so.
That's true, and I mean, obviously the roster structure and the way that Major League Baseball allows you to move players within the system was prohibitive, and the Rockies were kind of stuck with him in the majors without having to expose him to waivers. And, well, I mean, at the point he was looking at it in spring, after his first, you know, couple starts there, is that we're going to convert you to a one-inning reliever. And Charlie77, I know you're listening, he was commenting that when he went to spring training and watched Paulino, you know, pitch, he looked downright dominating. And it could also have been spring training fluff that we got from the beat reporters, but they were all saying that Paulino was looking dominant. He was feeling dominant. And he said, you know, I would like to be in the rotation, but I do like to, you know, be able to just uncork my my fastball and, you know, just try to do my best. And I feel good and I feel strong and, like, I'm doing a good job. And, well, spring training makes fools of us all.
Well, and it's not like he had a bad April either. I mean, he was okay in April.
It was acceptable. It didn't look good. The ERA numbers weren't great, and his walk numbers were way too high. But, I mean, it's April. Everyone gets kind of that April. At least in my mind, everyone gets that April pass. But, and in May, he showed some signs of improvement. His walk numbers went down. See, the irony of Paulino's walk numbers improving is the fact that he gave up walks before giving up, you know, big hits, like that Prince Fielder home run in the first game of the Milwaukee season or series. He walked the Ryan Braun, and then Prince Fielder just absolutely destroyed a baseball into the right field stands.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, had he not walked Braun, it would have been a tying homer, assuming that that would have been the end, or that he would have gotten everyone else in the batting order.
Mm-hmm.
But as it stands, that walk proved to be absolutely painful. And Paulino's walks and his, you know, meltdowns are, I mean, I don't know. I guess I don't. I try to look for the circumstantial, try to look for the, you know, what legitimately stinks about it, what legitimately is, you know, bad, is really a struggling point for him, and then what is pure bad luck and curse and mojo and stuff. And honestly, most of these Paulino walk-off wins, and I'm not trying to excuse him from them by any stretch, because, well, he still gave them up and the other relievers didn't, except for Street and Betancourt, but it was bloop doubles, it was singles in no man's land, and then the one big hit would come across.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel awful for the guy, because he was getting some things together, and then and nobody can deny there's no bad luck in there either for him. Because honestly, I'm still remembering that Buster Posey blooper to no man's land, and then that one, just killed him. All these balls finding holes in the infield, and I'm like, these are supposed to be outs. He's not giving up that great of contact, and yet it was almost Morales-esque the way that the wheels would just come off after that, because it would be the bloop single, the bloop double, whatever, but he couldn't pitch his way out of it either. I mean, most of the pitchers on the staff give up their share of bloops and bad bounces and stuff like that, but then they proceed to strike out the next batter or get the pop-up or whatever it is. That they don't follow it up by giving up the massive solid contact immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one thing that Felipe Paulino, that really sealed his fate, not being able to pitch himself out of his own mistakes.
Going back to Greg Reynolds, just to wrap up that side of the discussion, we had been talking about his AAA performance, and I mean, when you look at that compared to his brief time earlier with the Rockies, it obviously doesn't look as good, but you have to keep in mind that, you know, when you pitch for the Sky Sox, you know, it's a little bit of a challenge there to keep your lines looking all that great. And when you look at some of the other starting pitchers, in fact, possibly all of them, Greg Reynolds looks pretty good.
Yeah, there's not a lot of good options. I mean, is Buckner still even with? He's still with the team in a relief role, right?
Buckner? No, Buckner actually was activated from the disabled list to replace Reynolds in the rotation.
Okay, good. So
the Sky Sox rotation is as follows. Drum roll, please. Billy Buckner, Claudio Vargas, Alan Johnson, Josh Mickey, and two innings of Andy Graham every 5 days to start.
I cannot believe that Claudio Vargas is still with the system. I mean, I thought for sure he was gone. I was like, Claudio Vargas, that's kind of a silly guy to acquire. And then I get this like scary, scary feeling that sometime in the middle of June or mid to late July, we're going to see him kind of get one of those Valerio De Los Santos kind of starts, you know?
Uh-huh. Well, he would have been released if he wasn't hurt. But, I mean, you rarely see them release guys hurt out of spring training, because it's kind of a terrible thing to do.
Yeah, the guy never had a chance.
Exactly. Know? So they say, come rehab with us. And I think once he got healthy, he would have been a release candidate if it weren't for the fact that there's no starting pitching in AAA. So they're like, hey, we have like two open spots. Why don't you pitch for the Sky Sox for a little while? And so he's stuck for the time being. But I mean, John Main's on the DL. You know, Clayton Mortensen and now Greg Reynolds are with the Rockies and so on and so forth. But again, they've only got four true starting pitchers active right now. Again, they've got Andy Graham doing spot starts, and he can only throw like 2.5 innings. So
it makes me think of the original Rocktober 2007, where the team had a rotation hole, and so what they tried for was Denny Bautista, and Clint Hurdle had to nurse him threw two innings of work, and then Mark Redmond came in and struck out 6-6 in relief and won the rotation spot for the rest of the season, and then a 2008 rotation spot as well, as I kind of shudder and just got that cold doom feeling on the in the back of my neck, you know, oh, Mark Redmond.
He was our fourth starter, and as I recall, our opening day starter, Coors Field opening day, yeah.
2008 rotation was, I believe, Jeff Francis, Aaron Cook, Jason Hirsch was in that rotation still, because I think he had, his leg had healed up after that miserable liner in 2007.
No, I think Hirsch was hurt at the time.
What? Okay, we're looking this up, but this is just too interesting to pass up.
Yeah, just look at our first five starters for 2008, because technically Jeff Francis was first. It'll show Kip Wells, but
yeah,
it was definitely Francis at the top.
Let's see, schedule and results for the top five. Let's see. The first game, obviously we had the Kip Wells thing, but it's really Jeff Francis. Aaron Cook. Oh, Yubaldo Jimenez, obviously. Then Mark Redmond. And Franklin Morales is in there somewhere, but he got his start jumbled up because Francis got the opening day start, but it was only for a few innings, and then it got rained out. So then Kip Wells took the spot start for the rematch of game one. And then Aaron Cook, Jimenez, Redmond, and then Francis came back around the horn for the number five slot there. And yeah, so good times. I know everyone cared about that and everything. Good old memories of Rockies rotations past.
Oh yes, it's terrifying Rockies rotations past. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we don't look back sometime at the end of this year and say, man, remember when Claudio Vargas was in the rotation?
Well, you remember 2007, Tim Hiricola got a three-inning start. And
yeah, and that one start got us to the playoffs because we won that game, and we obviously needed just the one. That one win got us to the tiebreaker game, or the 163 game, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, granted, it was in, like, July when Hiricola made the start, but that one win in a game that we were supposed to lose was it's always funny to look at how this all boils down to, you know, how much better our depth is in 2010 than it was in 2007. Obviously, it looks bad right now because we have two depth starters up in the major league rotation right now. But the point is that the guys that we have down there are the same kind of depth starters we had in 2007. Now, the depth starters we have up right now were the original depth starters, and they are like the front of the line depth, if that makes sense. But 2007, the top of the line for depth was the guys who are still in the minors right now in 2011. That caliber of pitchers. So we're talking about having depth starters that are legitimate major league number five, number six starters, as opposed to a number eight starter who's really pitching in relief, but we stretched him out over a week so we could bring him up.
Yep.
So, I mean, I gotta say, good, you know, for as much as the team has been struggling lately, we'll get on the bats in a little bit here, but the fact of the matter is that the pitching has been questionable at moments with guys like Paulino, with Street and Betancourt having implosions, but as far as looking at this kind of a overall scope of how well the pitching's been doing, we've won seven of our 10 starts, or no, I should say seven of our 11 starts now that Mortensen got that loss, but that we've won seven out of 11 of these guys who are supposed to be number five, number six, number seven starters. Mm-hmm. And we won Alan Johnson's start, for Pete's sake.
Yeah, I was actually just about to say that the Alan Johnson start earlier in the year reminded me of the Hiricola game a lot. Similar situations where we basically added somebody to the roster to start one game. And we were all expecting, you know, Armageddon, but we ended up being just enough in contention to take both of those games. So
yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's always fun to look back over the season and see where the ridiculous depth starts, you know, came into play. And if I recall correctly, we lost both of De Los Santos' starts. So I guess it didn't work out too well in 2008, did it?
A lot didn't work out so well in 2008.
So moving forward from our rotation depth, we obviously saw Franklin Morales get traded to the Boston Red Sox.
Correct.
Before Felipe Paulino was designated for assignment. And, you know, what are your thoughts on that, Greg? I know that you were the one who caught it before, because I don't even remember what I was doing that night. So, you know, on air, thank you for being the one to catch that. It was, we all have feelings about Morales, Greg. And it's tough to have feelings about a lot of players sometimes, but Morales seems to be one of those guys who brings out either the longing sadness or ire of many a baseball fan. Where do you think you fall on that split?
it's so complicated to talk about him with all the history he has and where people try to identify where he went wrong and if we could have done better and should we have ever even considered turning him into relief. I want to remind people that at the time, turning Morales into a reliever at the time, which was, I guess, late 2009, mid-2009 when that happened. Is that right? I think so. Yeah, because he had started like three games at the start of 09, and then we sent him down because we didn't need him anymore. And then we recalled him to relief, basically. And at the time, the decision made sense because we didn't have any viable options. Now, if we maybe should have thought about turning him around as a starter again the next year a little harder. They treated him as a starter going in, but kind of similar to Paulino this year, pretty early on in spring training, they said, we're going to be using you in the pen.
Mm-hmm.
And we made that decision before we ended up signing Joe Bimel. And then we signed Joe Bimel. And, so that's how that worked out. But when it comes to Morales, I always took the position that most of the complaining about Morales from the fan base was just scapegoating. I never felt that Morales was such a huge negative force on the team that, he was worth all of the hatred and vitriol that he attracted. The only time where he legitimately was that much of an issue was when he was closing early last year. And, we didn't have a lot of other options at the time. Of course, Corpus ended up taking over that role before Street got back. But, I understand the distaste for him after that point. It's just, kind of the same position I am with Clint Barmas and Jorvit Torrealba and some of the other players that attracted a lot of weird double standards, if you will. I was often in line to defend him just so somebody would have his back. But at the same time, it's good that we managed to trade him. We don't know if we're getting a player yet. It might just be cash if the player to be named later is never picked. But, somebody's interested. The optimist in me says, somebody somewhere is going to end up with him, whether it's Boston, whether it's one or two more teams down the line, and they're going to manage a couple good years out of him and give him some redemption of some sort. But
when I always bring up my sim leagues here, because it's always kind of funny to see how alternate realities, turned out with the Rockies. For example, like every league that I started up with, because we were using that 2006 roster set where Tulowitzki was still a prospect and no one knew what his ceiling was, and Garrett Atkins was still a top flight third baseman in baseball. And it turns out as my leagues went on, as far as major leaguers stuck around and stuff, Garrett Atkins was always the mainstay of those Rockies teams. The computer hated Helton. It always gave the age regression a bit too much of a weighted factor, I guess. Todd Helton would always fall apart within a season or two. And just guys that are – we know Helton's better than just a standard issue. Oh, the player's getting older. He's got to be done. But the game didn't like that. Anyways, the point of the story was that Garrett Atkins – actually, that wasn't the point of the story at all. Just kind of a funny tidbit. Garrett Atkins is the best Rockies player, ever, apparently. But Morales, what I ended up doing is I somehow – between all the trades I'd made, and I forgot who my rotations ended up being, between a mix of free agents and prospects and stuff like that. But Morales ended up just not finding a way to stick in the rotation. And his durability numbers were bad and stuff, so I converted him to a closer. And then he fell apart for the rest of the season, kind of like almost Sean Chacon-esque. So I traded him off to Toronto. I don't even remember who I got back from him. I ended up being a dominant closer in Toronto. I was kicking myself. Put a lot of work into Franklin Morales becoming a closer and then gave up on him too fast. Well, the pain and agony. But that was was looking again at what they thought his ceiling was in 2007, 2006, 2007, right around there. So,
Yeah, in contrast to real life, I would say that the team definitely put their own great deal of effort into Franklin Morales. They gave him every chance in the world and maybe one or two more.
Well, I feel like we can almost draw a line between Ian Stewart and Franklin Morales as far as their careers go. Because the two of them, and I don't mean to just be the standard issue organizational basher, but I do feel like they screwed around with these guys a bit too much. Where they and a real good major leaguer is obviously going to be able to overcome and just take the job by force and good stuff like that. But we got to remember too that not every prospect is going to be Troy Tulowitzki. Not every prospect is going to be Evan Longoria, where they are, you know, come up and light the lamps immediately and everyone's super excited about them. A lot of these guys do take a lot of time and they need, you know, sometimes careful handling. And again, it sounds like I'm overly babying the players, but it's just kind of a truth about things. When Stewart first came up, he had to keep battling Garrett Atkins, who was on a very obvious, blatant, and painful decline, and yet they kept throwing him out there when Ian Stewart should have been getting more reps and more reps. And, you know, I was almost of the opinion, just keep Stewart down. If you're going to start Atkins, start Atkins. Even if, I mean, wait until he forces your hand, but don't go and dink around with Stewart at third base, kind of, and then second base, and I don't even know what was going on there. But it's kind of the same thing with Morales. You know, don't jerk him around as, oh, you're in the minors, no, you're the relief in the minors, no, now you're a starter in the minors, no, now you're a starter in the majors, no, just kidding, now you're a reliever in the majors, now you're the closer in the majors, no, now you're just, you know, long relief, no, now you're traded.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously a lot of the weight has to fall on Morales' shoulders. And Jim Armstrong wrote about this right after the trade that, you know, he had all, I mean, he kind of cited a bit of a specious reasoning for it, but it was kind of an interesting one to see that with such a Venezuelan clubhouse, he was surrounded by countrymen, which isn't necessarily the panacea to making a uncomfortable young player suddenly do better, but it was at least a positive thing to say that you have support of your other Venezuelan countrymen. He mentioned that Rafael Betancourt took him under his wing, would sit next to him in the bullpen and say, okay, take a look at this guy. We're probably going to have to face him in the 6th or 7th or 8th or whatever, and we're going to, you know, pitch him inside or watch how he approaches this fastball or, you know, just good mentory kind of things. It's a kind of a feel-good and makes me like Rafael Betancourt that much more. But obviously Morales just couldn't seem to, I don't even know if it's obviously not a lack of effort because I can't imagine anyone knowing that their job is on the line is going to go out there and be going, whatever. But he obviously just couldn't get it together in his head. And, you know, much as I'm glad he's getting another shot with Boston, I think that's going to be almost worse for him.
Well, it's certainly a more stressful environment, and I was complaining a couple days ago, back when the trade actually happened, that I was really disappointed at some of the comments that Rockies fans around the internet were making. I don't want to get too much into that, but general consensus seemed to be that you Red Sox, or we Rockies fans thought Morales was bad here, you know, wait until that head case gets to Boston and is getting booed on every other pitch or whatever. It's going to be tough for him, but he's had one outing so far and it wasn't great. I think he allowed two runs, but both were unearned or something like that. I mean, I'll probably be keeping track of him just because I'm curious, but.
Oh, how can we not? I mean, we keep track of every former Rocky. There's always a Brad Hop watch, even if it's not terribly official. We, you know, keep an eye on our former guys, see how they're doing. In his one outing with the Red Sox, Morales went two innings in one game. He struck out two batters. He walked one and gave up a couple hits. Let's see. Yeah, gave up two hits, two runs, zero earned. So, you know, good work, Boston defense, but.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the advanced numbers and that this almighty two inning sample size. I mean, he hasn't allowed an earned run yet, but his the numbers are 0 ERA, 2.41 FIP, 5.27 xFIP. They mean nothing. I'm sorry, a two inning sample size is obviously not enough to judge Morales by in his career with Boston so far. But you know, I wish him all the best, and I hope most Rockies fans too, because
they don't.
I know. I'm trying to see the good in people, but
yeah.
I think it's a problem with every fan base. So I mean, we shouldn't pin this on Rockies fans at all. But there's a lot of people mistake or can't seem to draw the line between vitriol toward a player's performance and turning this person into the Antichrist. Because Morales and Felipe Paulino may not be the best pitchers on the planet. In fact, I assure you, they're not. But that doesn't, I mean, the words that I see thrown around about these guys is as if they, you know, purposely came in, threw up the bird to Rockies fans, and then teed up a homer. These guys aren't doing this on purpose. Give them a bit of a break here. Have you ever done a bad job at your job? I mean, do people all call you a terrible person there? You know, let's give us a rest. I understand getting excited and passionate about it, and a lot of, and in the defense of a lot of the critics, they are just saying, he's not a good pitcher, we need to move him, we think he's a great guy. But it kind of scares me a little bit to see, the people who make it sound like a player who has been screwing up a lot and doing very poorly and losing the team games is a bad person. I guess that's just sports, though. What can I say?
Well, and even further, going back to kind of what I was mentioning earlier, Morales was in such a background role this year that he barely even had any impact, positive or negative, on the team all season. But the amount of times that I read that Morales cost us the game again this year really kind of didn't match up with that so much. He's one of those players who everyone would single out and remember what he did wrong during the game, and it was obviously his fault more than anybody else's fault, even though other people contributed to that same loss.
And yeah, it's the same story with Paulino as well. The Milwaukee walk-off in the 14th on Friday. You got to remember that Rafael Betancourt gave up a Casey McGee home run to tie the game, and then Houston Street gave up
three blown leads in one game.
It still blows my mind to say it, but Houston Street gave up a Unieski Betancourt home run. Unieski Betancourt. Oh my goodness gracious. But they get the pass because they have a history of success, obviously. So when the game comes down to it, and I'll actually say the Friday game, I have no criticisms of it. It sucked that the Rockies lost, but I honestly am not on Jim Tracy's case about this game at all. Because when he went to the bullpen, after Betancourt blew it, he didn't go straight to Paulino. He went to, I believe it was the first two mats we saw were Reynolds to relieve Hamill, and then I think it was Belial for two innings after that. So we saw Lidstrom directly after Betancourt, and then Street after Lindstrom, and then Lindstrom gave up. It was Lindstrom, then Daly, then Street, then Paulino. So at that point, he had done it the way I would. I mean, the way that I feel so lofty saying this, but the way I think he should have done it, he used his better. I mean, he still saved Street, which is a general criticism, but he didn't go directly to the back end guy saying, "Oh, we're going to need the better guys going." He said, "We're going to use every good member of the bullpen before the worst guy in the bullpen," and that's exactly what they did. And Matt Daly looked good, and Matt Belial looked pretty good, and the Mats all looked good in that game. So, you know, kudos to Jim Tracy for that good decision, and it makes the game fall that much more squarely on Felipe Paulino's shoulders. But I don't know. The way I see it is that everybody says, well, it's a pitcher's job to get outs. Yeah, not everyone's as good as their job as everyone else. So,
and further, it's not always one person not doing the job.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can have four pitchers not getting outs, and it's always Morales. It's always Morales they remember, though.
Oh yeah, it's always the scapegoat. It's true of every sport. Who dropped the key pass? Who missed the clutch free throw? Who, you know, dropped their man at the blue line and allowed the game winning goal in overtime? It's always that kind of thing. You don't think about the positive impacts they might have had earlier in the game or other potential scapegoats, especially in baseball when it comes down to one batter, one pitcher. It's just very, very, very easy to assign goats and to assign heroes because of just the one-on-one nature of baseball at the beginning of an at-bat. So, I don't know. I feel bad for the two guys, and I keep saying I don't know because I'm not on the I hate these guys with every fiery passion within me because we've seen a lot worse come through Coors Field. But at the same time, we've also never seen Rockies teams with this much chance of success as we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the standard of hero and zero kind of changes when you are a team that is supposed to win their division.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the notations that people have been mentioning kind of leads back to what we've been saying so many times, including on this show here, about how the standard for the bottom of the barrel has risen. I mean, somebody like Paulino 5 years ago, 6 years ago, might have had to be in the bullpen all year, regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, the fact that, say what you want about waiting too long to get rid of these guys, the fact that we can at this point is a huge sign of improvement. So,
it speaks to depth. Having a guy like Matt Daly just waiting for his chance to get back to the majors is a promising thing. I still maintain that he we saw a good season of success, and then his next season where he obviously was hurt and stuff like that was a little bit less successful, but he's a back-end bullpen. It's always weird when I say back-end or front-end of the bullpen. Who am I talking about? I think back into the rotation, you know, we're talking about the number five, number four starters, but is the back end of the bullpen the long man and the sixth inning guy, or is it the setup and the closer?
I would associate it with the setup and the closer, but that's because I think of back as like end, which is like end of the game. But at the same time, you mean back in terms of the back of the grouping, as in farther away from the front line.
Precisely.
Which would be like Street, Lindstrom, so forth.
Yeah,
so.
Precisely. So when we're talking about a guy like Daly, okay, so he is a back of the line type of reliever. He's good. He's definitely major league quality. The actual leverage of said quality is debatable. I don't think I'd want to see him in the eighth inning. Not yet, at least. I mean, until he, you know, continues being lights out or something.
Thankfully, that's one area where we don't have to worry about right now, because we've got four pitchers who could handle the eighth inning if we wanted them to.
Precisely. So with a guy like Daly, we don't have to go and pull up a Claudio Vargas and do, you know, on the rationale that, oh, well, he's a major league pitcher and he has experience and stuff. We have a guy who we strongly believe is better than the alternatives and would be on the team were it not for awkward roster constraints like Paulino had. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, good on the Rockies for being able to build this kind of depth. Anyhow, we should move on from the bullpen problems.
Well, actually, I was just going to talk just a little bit quickly about where do you stand on bringing up Matt Daly? Should they have brought up somebody like Rex Brothers now that there is a spot on the 40-man roster? Two now, actually. But, you know, how important is it to have two left-handers in the pen? Because when I wrote that post, which you referenced earlier, I said, I don't think this is going to change very much. I think the way Jim Tracy uses the bullpen is Matt Reynolds handles the lefties. Morales was never in the only lefties spot anyway. What we need is another pitcher who can replace that back end of the line that you were just talking about, which Matt Daly does fine, which is what we were using Morales for. So my position is we don't need to worry about that right now. How about you?
Well, I don't think we're going to need to worry about it either. It's probably about a 2-week stretch that we're going to have to worry about having a second lefty at most, because Reynolds is up here for a spot start. He'll probably be sent right back down after that spot mm-hmm. start. I don't see any reason for him to be up past that. So when
unless they leave him in long relief for some reason,
I don't think they're going to do that. I just don't think they're going to do that right now. It would be nice to have one swingman, but at the same time, having him up here, it's kind of unnecessary. Who's the better relief pitcher? Is it Rex Brothers or is it Greg Reynolds? I'd argue Rex Brothers.
Yeah, I would certainly as well.
Not necessarily that I think that Rex Brothers is, you know, the panacea to all the Rockies bullpen woes ever, but he's a relief pitcher. He's a future closer kind of guy. So he's got big nasty numbers in the minor leagues, kind of like Matt Reynolds did last year. Mm-hmm. So the only reason that we don't have him up to be the second lefty in the pen is purely because we need the starter more than we need the reliever. And honestly, with the caliber of the guys we have manning the bullpen right now, between the Mats and then Street and Betancourt, they should just be able to get guys out.
Mm-hmm.
Just get the guys out. And you're not going to be able to see – this might actually be, you know, a bit of relief for a lot of big Jim Tracy opponents, because we won't have to see – ridiculous numbers of double switches and bringing in pitchers for one batter and then losing them immediately and stuff like that. They might be forced to think a bit more, well, do we really think that Matt Lindstrom can get Lefty McBig Hit out, or do we need to bring in Reynolds? Or do they save Reynolds not for just that one batter at the end of the sixth inning when the starter pitcher's already thrown 110 pitches and they're mm-hmm. looking kind of sketchy, but rather thinking, okay, where can we slot Reynolds in so that he'll face Lefty McBig Hit and then have to get out Righty McNaughta's big hit and then face Lefty McOkay guy after that so he has a lefty-heavy inning? Though I think that's – we don't have a true loogie on the team. And for those of you who don't know what a loogie is, besides a nasty throat clearing, is a lefty one-out guy. That is the favorable acronym. And we don't have that luxury right now. We don't have we don't have a true lefty. We don't have, you know, someone like Mike Myers in the team anymore. And if you look back to Mike Myers' numbers with the Rockies, I think it was in 2000 or 2002, just disgusting numbers against lefty and then the other way, disgusting numbers against righties. We don't have a true come in, get the left-hander out, leave the game guy. Matt Reynolds is a one-inning pitcher. He's okay, he's good against lefties, he's okay good against righties, so keep him in. I mean, the splits don't say that he is a lefty guy only, so I hope that this short stretch here will kind of say, you know, maybe put a bit more trust in Reynolds than just to be the lefty guy, because unless you actually have Ron Mahey on your roster or whatever other lefty, like Arthur Rhodes or whoever, just pitch your pitchers for an inning. If they get into trouble, then think about going, but don't just bring them in for the one batter, because Matt Reynolds is not a lefty specialist, Morales is not a lefty specialist, and the Rockies haven't really had a lefty specialist since Ray King was here.
Yeah, and I mean, when you really focus in that specifically on lefty specialists, that's absolutely true. At the same time, I know that it goes through Jim Tracy's head. Even if he's going to pitch Matt Reynolds for a whole inning, he's probably more likely to pitch that inning if there's two or three lefties that are scheduled to hit in that inning. And if all or if one or more of them reach, oftentimes he will end up substituting a right-hander in there. It seems like a lot of the times that Matt Reynolds is replaced or he only gets one out or so is when it's not so much that here's your one batter, we're going to take you out either way. It's usually that the scheduled batters that he's supposed to get out, which is more than one or two, have not finished the inning, and then somebody else does. So it's
We also see a lot of Reynolds coming in to replace, you know, Jason Hamill or whoever. Like in Hamill's last start, he was almost done with the seventh, and then they brought in Reynolds to face Prince Fielder, and it worked out. He got Fielder on three pitches. But that's not to say that Jason Hamill necessarily would have, you know, failed or succeeded in that situation, but it kind of leads the question of, do you really just want to burn Reynolds this fast if you really need that lefty to get the tough lefties? It's kind of a catch-22 for a manager in this spot, because if Hamill had queued up a home run to Prince Fielder right there, why didn't you bring Reynolds in? But at the same time, you know, later on down the line, oh, I wish we had Reynolds still, so.
Hindsight. Basically.
Always 2020. I see, I have a, oh, I don't know. It kind of, there's a million different ways you can take these kind of bullpen discussions, but, and like you said, it's always hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
Always based on hindsight. And so going forward, I would like to see Reynolds be looked at as a one-inning guy and not just a lefty specialist, especially given the fact that we don't have the luxury of burning one lefty just to face a Prince Fielder or, you know, David Ortiz or whoever's in the lineup there. We need to be thinking about, okay, how can we get the most mileage out of our one-inning bullpen guys?
Mm-hmm.
Because Reynolds is not going to come into a game to face one batter, or probably even not to face – I mean, he might come in for an inning in the next week, and that's just so he can be on some sort of a regular work schedule. Mm-hmm. But, you know, past that, they need to be a bit smarter with the way that they handle lefties. And when Rex Brothers does come up, and I just have no doubt in my mind that he will be the corresponding move and Reynolds is reoptioned.
Watch them call up Eric Stoltz.
Oh boy. Major league experience and stuff. But no, the comments we've seen from Jim Tracy are saying, yes, Rex Brothers is very close, which pretty much means I'd call him up now if I could, but it's not my call.
Mm-hmm. The only other bullpen note really quickly to get out of the way I can think of is, we definitely do now have a bullpen that is more Matt's than not. which is a little awkward. Matt is still the leading name in the organization. There are, I think, eight of them, and there are seven Joshes. So Josh is second. And then after that, I really don't care to know. So
I wonder how many Jasons we have, because we got two Jasons in the majors already.
If you want to get started on that offense discussion you wanted to have, I can actually look up how many Jasons we have, thanks to Rocky's roster, really quick.
Well, there's not a lot to say about the bats in general, besides what we've been saying for the last while. And we're going to see this in the rock pile in the morning as well, or in the morning, or right now, wink, wink, or we're recording this on Sunday night. Who are we kidding? Well, the bats have actually not been atrocious the past 2 weeks. The problem is that it hasn't been a steady 5 runs a game. It's been hit 7, 8 runs a game and then hit 1 the next game.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the overall numbers over the last week or two here, you have Giambi, who's at an OPS like way over 1,000 because of that 3-homer game in Philly, and then the homer the next day against Milwaukee. but Todd Helton's got an OPS over 1,000. Seth Smith does as well. Jose Lopez has batted about 350 for the past 2 weeks, and there's been a couple. Tulowitzki's been at least above 800 OPS, which is bad for Tulowitzki, but okay, but it's good for your major league shortstop. And Gonzalez has really turned it on in May, which is just so encouraging to see.
Yeah.
But past those guys, like, there's like a line drawn at Tulowitzki at just above 800 OPS, and then everyone below them is in the 6 and 500s, and everyone. And it's not like a good, you know, excuse it because, oh, Ined has batted like 100, but he's got a 390 zillion up. No, he's got a, last 2 weeks, sub 300 on base percentage. Like, everybody except for the guys mentioned has been not performing well.
Right.
And it's this is where people bring up timely hitting and things like that. We've seen a lot of bad luck. I mean, it seems like the eternal excuse. We've seen a lot of bad luck, but it really just seems, and again, I say seems, so I'd have to go through every single play of the last 2 weeks to figure this out, but there's been just a lot of balls that should be missing gloves. We saw one, it looked to be a single back up the middle. I think Lopez hit it either Friday or Saturday against Milwaukee, and Ricky Weeks is shading so close to second base that he was able to get in and make a good jump throw and get Lopez by three steps.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they're making good contact, I'm pulling my hair and just going, really? Really? That, really? This something has got to give. And I've been saying this for like a month now, and people say, oh, well, it's a batting coach. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's that. How do the Giants keep blooping walk-offs, and the Rockies seem to find gloves with every single ball that should be doing the same thing? It's like opposite ends of the spectrum. It's like they're all hitting the same baseballs. They're all hitting them with relatively similar force, but the Giants are missing the gloves and hitting the gap or just punching it over the infield, and Carlos Gonzalez is flying out to the deepest part of the park on a very well-struck ball.
That's just mathematics in effect. It all has to balance out one way or the other. It's like if you flip two coins and your left coin gets all heads and your right coin gets all tails. It's perhaps a little weird that one is only getting one result, but when you compare all the results together, that's exactly what you'd expect.
Yeah, but you'd expect it mixed between the two. You expect that ball to go over Mike Fontenot's glove. You expect Ricky Weeks to miss that baseball. It's a hard bouncer up the middle. But instead, Mike Fontenot spears it in the air, and Ricky Weeks is able to make the jump throw, or Carlos Gomez is able to track it down and make a jumping catch with the warning track. And honestly, this is why I'm not so doom and gloom about everything, because we're watching these games, and yeah, we see a lot of bad contact and stuff like that, but again, remember that a 60% failure rate in Major League Baseball is elite.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 400 on base percent. Those are elite numbers right there. And so we want to point out, I'll look at all these wasted at-bats. You can't expect every single line hit to be a line drive, even if it's snared by someone, even if it's a liner straight at someone. All your best players, all your Babe Ruth, your Barry Bonds, your whoever, are going to roll them over to shortstop here and there. But honestly, this is it seems like an inordinate amount of you've got to be kidding me. And this just might be me being the Rockies fan and saying we should be winning these games because we should be winning them on paper, but we're not, and nothing's giving. I'm going to stand on it. This team is just not getting breaks right now, and I don't mean umpire breaks. I don't mean, you know, oh, well, they got lucky on that bad call or that miss, whatever. It just, everybody seems to always be in the perfect position for whatever's happening that hurts the Rockies. Either they're in the perfect position for the ball to get through the infield when they're on defense, or the defense is on perfect position so the ball doesn't get through the infield. It's like they're clairvoyant or something like that. Clairvoyant?
Clairvoyant, yes.
Thank you. I guess I don't know where that came from.
All right, well, regarding Jason's, we only have two, Hamill and Giambi. Yeah, and then with Josh's, we have seven, Fields, Hungerman, Mickey, Miller, Rutledge, Slats, and Sullivan. And then with Matt's, four of the eight are in our bullpen right now, which is still trippy.
Yeah, so I know you have Macri in AAA.
I lost that window. I can look up all the Matts. Yeah,
Not important.
Already got it. You have Belial, Crocker, Daly, Lindstrom, Macri, Pagnozzi, Reynolds, and Sanders.
There you go. Wow. These things are funny.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything better to say about that. Really, though, with the bats, honestly, we're facing Arizona in weak pitching in Coors Field for a four-game series. I would love to see anything happen. Because right now, I really do feel like a lot of the team is getting back into a better place. We're seeing a lot, you know, we're seeing better struck balls. We're seeing, you know, more, when I say a deep flat, I mean like a good deep flat, not a mile-high pop-up that might clear, might not. Nope, it's a can of corn, just kidding. I mean, like, well-struck, like, that one has a chance, that one has a chance. No, 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 of course Carlos Gomez has it. Mm-hmm. Things like that. We are seeing, and this might just be me, but we're seeing some better approaches at the plate. We're seeing some better struck balls. We're seeing things looking a lot better with a lot of players, but some of them are still struggling, and obviously the Rockies are not winning games right now, at least not a lot of them. We caught some fire before we got to Milwaukee, but apparently all them beer-soaked Brewers were able to quench those fires. I should use that as a headline or something.
Okay. You have 90 posts due tomorrow morning.
So. Yeah, I do. Oh, man. This is going to turn around. This team is too good for it not to turn around. Yes, there are still question marks, and we're going to talk about some of the replacement options in the rock pile, but really, this team is better than they are playing right now. And we all know it, and I think that's why we're all so frustrated by it, that we know that Tulowitzki is not the slump fest that he is right now. Gonzalez is breaking out of his slump from April, and, you know, just things are going to turn around in some way, shape, or form. As one of the Brewers fans actually came over and offered some consolation, and really, really, really cool, Cheese Man or something like that. But they're saying we've been facing the same thing all year, and yep, hits are finally starting to come. And I just hope, because it's going to turn around. I guarantee you, it will turn around. I just hope it's not too late when it does.
Right. I have a friend who is who lives up in De Pere, Wisconsin, and is a Brewers fan, and you know, I've been following their season a little bit more closely than some of the others as a result of that, and they, you know, they had lofty expectations, but with their new acquisitions of Greinke and Markham, and everyone was really excited. They were going to be right there in that mix with Cincinnati and St. Louis to win the Central, and they got off to an awful start. They were like 5 or 6 games back of 500, I think, at one point. And their challenge has been, whereas we got off to that crazy good start, and now we feel all dejected and so forth because we're just sinking like an anchor, they've been looking up the whole time. And for them, it might be a little bit more of an optimistic feeling because, you know, they're coming back up, whereas we're kind of, you know, slowly fading down. And, I mean, you know, it was funny looking at the standings and realizing that the Dodgers are now below the Diamondbacks. Or at least they were this morning.
They are. The Diamondbacks are at 500 at 23-23. Dodgers are at 21-27 and playing 438 ball. And San Diego is at 19-28.
Right. Well, we of course have these four games against the Diamondbacks coming up next after the off day on Monday. It would be a good time to cool them down. And, you know, so far this season, before this road trip, we had been playing better on the road than at home, and this kind of switched that up. And maybe it's time for a good homestand over these next 7 games.
Now, this is a good chance for the Rockies just to kind of get some wins under their belt, feel better about getting some hits, and, you know, just going back to playing good baseball, because you can see it starting to weigh on the team a little bit. After the hot start, I'm not going to say they're coasting or anything like that, but they, you know, expectations were maybe not playing 140-win baseball, but, you know, being able to keep some semblance of that success.
Right.
And instead, I mean, you can see them starting to make more errors. They're starting to slip up on things a little bit more. And, you know, the team's just got to tighten back up and just play good defense again and do their best on offense. And if they can get those things together, it's still a winning combination. Mm-hmm. And this team is still a, not a favorite necessarily, but they're still in very tight competition for the division lead. They're 3.5 back right now, but this team is with as many games as we have left to play. This is going to be a good race, whether or not the team looks good or bad right now. This is going to be a good race going down the stretch.
We've still got quite a few interdivision games going on. So, you know, we all, well, I guess not we all, that's kind of the point, but everybody who's kind of middle, medium-minded there, you know, reminded everybody when we got off to that hot start, it's too early to, you know, claim that we are a great team. It's still too early now after the struggles that we've had the past few weeks to claim that we're a bad team. It's just one of those things where things have kind of evened out over the season so far, and the question is, which direction are we going to lean the rest of it? So,
exactly. I mean, everyone is so quick to accept the wins and accept the good hitting that everyone's hitting over their head, but no one's willing to accept when the pendulum swings the other way. And we know that Tulowitzki is not as bad as he's been showing so far. We know Gonzalez is not as bad as he's been showing so far. I can only hope that Todd's going to continue to be as good as he's been showing so far. But, you know, for right now, I mean,
as long as his back's okay.
Exactly. It's such a cop-out to say, but honestly, we just got to watch and wait. Mm-hmm. That's really what it comes to. We just got to watch and wait and hope that things turn around.
Pretty much. Well, let's see. We are at 57 minutes, so the time flew by once again. And unless you have any other important notes, we should probably get out of here so we can get a blog produced for you tomorrow morning.
Yeah, boy, howdy. All right, it's going to be a long night tonight, boys and girls.
All right, well, in that case, we're going to head out for now. We will be back next Monday, May the 30th. And until then, on behalf of both of us, take care.